every Masjid so far in the past 10 years. He has visited all the temples and extracted the various lingas that were buried by the various Maharishis, that even the people didn't know was buried there. He brought it out of the earth.
What did he bring out?
The Shiva lingam.
Oh, I see.
See, he went to... there is, you know that Shankara is supposed to have buried five lingams in the various five parts of India. And no one knew where they were buried, but they knew where the temples were located, but they didn't know in what area the thing was actually buried by Shankara. And in the last 8 or 9 years, Sai Baba has visited all five of the temples and raised up the linga right out of the earth and put it in inside the temple. And this is what made all the pandits realize that he has done more for Sanatana Dharma than anybody, because he has actually located where these lingams were buried by Shankara, and not only take it out, but he was but did not leave it there. He brought it out of the earth with his spiritual knowledge. He brought it out of the earth, a spiritual power, and he placed it inside the temple.
For worship.
Yeah, and the lingams themselves now are giving off vibhuti.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, I need to read that biography. You know, I ordered 6 copies of Sai Baba's life,
yeah, right.
Because Louis Johnson gave me the address in India, and since I have some money in Indian dollars, I transferred some money to the bookseller, and about 3 weeks back, 6 copies came out of $5,
right.
Which Mrs. Johnson gave to me, and now she wants part one of that also, and I'm ready to order that again. Sai Baba's life, this picture that you have, Sai Baba.
Now this picture, go ahead.
Well, you can tell me.
I think we'll do you some relief, let Margaret tell.
You can tell Miss Manfred.
No, I was going on the bed, we're going to have you go ahead.
Well, you can tell Miss Manfred.
Yeah.
Huh? Is that what you're going to tell? That's what I can tell.
Well,
that is a manifested picture over there.
Yes.
Someone at the ashram took that photograph and then brought it back to Sai Baba for short term. There were a number of other people present, so he just took the photograph. That was enough for everyone. And that's one of the manifestations.
I didn't follow you.
There was only one copy.
Yes.
See, he brought back to show to Sai Baba.
Yes.
Well, other people around there that were there then said, oh, they wish they had a copy of that picture, see? So Sai Baba just took it, held it in his hand,
and made
like that, and manifested enough prints for everyone.
And
that's one of the manifested prints. See, Sai Baba says that anyone can do this. It's simply a matter of holding in the will the pattern of what you want manifested and then increasing the vibratory rate, and it has to manifest. And he says that mankind is, of course, that's how all the masters, he said, manifest these things, and humans can too. There are instances of, well, you know, many of the saints have manifested. I mean, Christian saints have manifested. Of course, we have many instances. Of course, Babaji. I hear in so many. Well, in the autobiography of a yogi, amulet, you know, that was given to.
Yeah. So far as the big leaders are concerned, these are very ordinary powers, because we are limited in our way, and we think these are great acts. Because I think in the Bible as well as in the Eastern scripture, these things are present, but spiritually they are not supposed to be highlighted.
That's right. They're not important spiritually.
That's right.
You know, they're powers that can be acquired and not used even for spiritual work. They can be used for very selfish things.
That's right. That's
and
why
so
the masters always
minimize. Mm-hmm.
That's right. The masters always try want us to water down this aspect. And the Swami also said the same thing. He said that whenever these thoughts and these things come about in religious literature, they should be watered down, and their importance should not be exaggerated.
This is one of the manifestations. I see somebody, one yogi says, Sai Baba, you are only using cities. And they challenge him. The law is in me, no city is necessary. You keep on practicing your meditation, and you'll get there someday. That was the one way he shut up that yogi. They think good many believe that Sai Baba has developed cities to be able to manifest. You see,
the cities, I think they are all the time there. It's up to you to use them.
He says that he is an incarnation of Shiva.
He's an incarnation of Shiva, so he doesn't have any cities.
Okay, that's all right. But the cities are also, I think, genuine techniques, but they are rather difficult to use. It is not a very proper way to go to God,
right.
That route.
But
it's a very tricky way, you can easily be sidetracked.
Right,
very
true. Quite
Sri Ramakrishna cautioned people against using these cities.
Well, he himself even told them when they start challenging that it's cities, and he showed them that there is no city in his work, because he is the only avatar mentioned in Vedanta that will come bringing Vibhuti. And wherever he goes, Vibhuti is manifested always in his presence. And whatever he gives to a devotee, some devotees have pictures of him in their house, and three types of Vibhuti will fall off from that picture. Three types: plain, sweet, and salt.
Oh my goodness. He's in his body right now.
Yeah, he's about 42 years of age.
I must go next year. Next year I'm planning on going to...
Well, the Ramas have seen him. Indra Devi, that's Indra Devi's teacher now. Yeah, you know, you heard of Indra Devi?
Yeah, the Mexican lady who has written a book on yoga also.
She has made him her teacher now. She went there to be initiated by him.
Oh, I need to take my copies. Yeah, I gave away all the six copies to these ladies, and I need to take back one copy.
You want a copy back?
No, Mrs. Johnson has a reserved one copy for me.
I'll give you a copy.
No, she has a reserved one copy for me. I got it for them. It came at my address. Mm. I took it out of the case and gave her all the six.
Mm.
And when she got them, she said, want it for me.
Jack, you may have that volume one, which is the one that we don't have.
Do you have volume one or volume two? I think volume two is his
biography. No, I got both. There's one, one is a paperback and one is a hardcoverback.
Right.
Well, the hardcoverback.
The
hardcoverback
is
the one that I got.
Bring both of them. I want to take the address, and actually I have a money order ready to put it out. I've got this American money order.
I think the one that we got. I had both. You see, when it first came out, when the Ramers came back from India, that picture was brought back by the Ramers. You see, they wanted a photograph. A fellow wanted a photograph of Sai Baba, and the moment he took up the camera to photograph him, Sai Baba stopped him from photographing him, and then he did like this and gave him the picture of himself. But then there were six or seven foreign people sitting there, and he took the picture back, and he said, mentally saying that these people would be jealous. So he did like that, and he made a dust each and he gave them all and said, this is for you and your friends as you go back to your country.
And somebody brought it here.
And this one is one that I got from the Ramers when they came back.
Oh my goodness. See, there's such people in India and all over the world. You are so right, Adonal, that we only have to search for them and they are there.
Right.
It doesn't matter if Yogananda or Sri Ramakrishna or Vivekananda have given up their bodies.
No, that's it.
Every time there are people,
right.
All you need, if you have a yearning in your heart,
right.
You go and meet Adonal.
This is exactly, you see, because the Ramas have gone, and through the Ramas, Indra Devi went. It's through the Ramas that Indra Devi found out about him.
Mm-hmm.
And Judith Tyberg of the East West Cultural Institute went there, and she was healed.
Who is this?
Judith Tyberg. I knew her, she used to belong to Theosophy. She was a woman that grew up. She, in fact, she was supposed to be the daughter of Amy Templeton. Or was it that evangelistic woman years ago? And she got Judith Tyberg, she got married, and then she got ill with arthritis, and she's about in her 60s. And she heard a Sai Baba, and then she wrote to him, and Sai Baba sent her a complete airplane ticket to come to India.
Is this what you're talking about?
Yes, that's the first one.
Because he hasn't seen that one,
has
he?
Life of Bhagavan. Judith Tyberg went. And when she met him, he healed her from arthritis. And she had chronic arthritis because all her fingers were numb. No, these masters are there, it's as I say, where you want to, who you want to contact, you know. They're all there, and it's just a matter of who you're drawn to.
Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva.
The deities are a phenomenal world.
They're
not
praying to one God.
There's the book.
And they don't take you to the one God.
The first person that Ann Jensen, I showed that picture to Ann Jensen, you know, she saw him right in the house and I had the picture. I walked in the house, I had the picture in my pocket, you know, and I had just come back from California and I came to visit Dallas and I was with Louise Johnson and she wanted me to meet Ann Jensen because Ann Jensen was a psychic, you know. So I had the picture in my pocket and I walk in. And I said to myself, well, here I am, and I see now who she can see. And she looked at me, she says, Adano, who is that man with a big bushy hair behind your head? He's walking behind you. I said, what man with a big bushy hair? He says, he's like a beetle. He looks like, you know, Jimi Hendrix, all dressed up, and he's walking behind you. And he's smiling. She says, but I can't look at him because there's so much pulse and vibration coming out of him. I said, well, I don't know. Are you sure he's not Yogananda? He said, no, I've seen Yogananda's picture, but I've never seen this person before. So we sit down talking, and then she had a little object that she had about the Viking religion, and she wanted me to look at it and what vibration I got from it. So I looked at it, and I told it was from the Viking religion, and that it was Thor, it represented Thor, the god in the Viking religion. And then when he finished talking, I said, I have a picture I want to show you, I want to see what vibration you get from it. So I took it out, but it was in the envelope, I didn't take out the picture, I said, it's in the envelope. And as soon as I hand her, she started crying. She said, it's the man behind you. She said, this is not a picture. Yeah, I don't know what it is. And I took it out and she looked at it. She says, this is not a picture. She couldn't face, because the material is not made by a camera. And she is a very aware psychic. And she holds the thing and she knows that this material, she says, but this is not a picture. And when she saw the picture, she says, no wonder you don't see no shadow. And you look at that picture, it looks very odd the way his foot is rested on that chair.
Yeah.
It looks like he's chiseled out of the wood.
Yeah.
You notice it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not quite on the floor.
And that's an odd looking chair, huh?
Yeah.
But Anne was very, very receptive to it. She picked up on very much. The thing is, what is more important though, is that you know that there is a divine power and the way in is looking inside, and not to have this thing come upon you without control. This is what you're trying to achieve, so that you can always be in control of it, and then from there on you can grow with the thing. This is the whole purpose. This is why they say salvation. You don't want this thing to happen to you that you don't have no control, because then you begin to do irrational things, and before you know it, you're the victim of environment, and if they are an environment that don't comprehend, is going to make a pretty mess of the thing. Especially your own life will be at stake in the way they act. You have no chance. Go to bed. I'm just going to stretch myself out. That's my bed. That's all I'm going to do.
Put your head up, but in fact we're going to have to get back to you right now.
is part one then.
Yes.
It doesn't say that it is part one.
But it
no.
is, Jack.
It is, because the other story starts from where it
where
is.
That one is.
Because the first chapter of that is the story so far. It sums up this and
yeah.
then it goes on.
Right.
From
there. So that's his parents.
Yes.
His parents
early
childhood.
There is a beautiful piece there. One day he is driving in the car with some of his disciples, you know. So the guy forgot to put gas in the tank. And when they're halfway through the journey, he realized that he didn't put no gas. So he took the side Bible. He got no gas in the tank, so he just stopped right here. And there's no gas facing around. So the side Bible said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Oh, come on, please, there is a dead in Bible." So he said, "Okay. Go down by the canal and fill the drum with water and come back." So the guy goes to the canal, fills the drum with water and came, and finally I'll put his finger and say, "That is the only gas." He said, when he put this can to his nose to go to pour the thing in the gas tank, he said it was like 100 proof gasoline. He never smelled gasoline so strong.
No, I
have
read the
autobiography.
And
I'm taking
the lesson
there. Well, she has her own books that have come to her. All her disciples, you know, of her life.
But are they
Asarapta disciples? No. If you go back to India, she's in Benares.
I have to go to Varanasi.
In the Ananda Moy Ashram is in the Bengali. And if you have several, but there's one in the
What is the name of that one that, you know, I had Bob Ray on it. I wanted to copy that for Randy.
Yes,
I'll have to ask him.
Modesty, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Modesty. Well, if he has one ashram in the Bengali, there are a few he has along that way, Bengal.
So she appeared, Ananda Moy Ma kept appearing to a little friend of ours, but before I ever met her, his friend. And she kept asking me, "Who is this woman that she's been seeing?" And so just about that time, Jack Unger came to Houston. So he had spent 8 years.
You know Jack Unger? He lives in Irwin.
He's the one who was in
Ananda Moy Ma's
ashram for 8 years.
Did
you know that?
No. In the same room. I met him in Dallas, you know, during a family visit several times.
Well,
every time I go, you know, in a different meeting, I run into him.
I said, "I've been wanting to get in touch with him because Bob Walker told me he was in Dallas."
Yeah.
And that Sunday night when Phil asked me to say it. He had been sitting on that same road.
Yeah.
So he saw
Alex
from there, and then after that,
he came to
pray for
me. Well, I'm glad to hear, and Clara was asking about him. Well, anyway, I took her to these meetings, SRS meetings, and let her meet Jack Unger. And she started describing things, and Jack just sat there flabbergasted. He said, "Imagine! Coming here to America, you know, and meeting someone who's been having visions of her, and she's been talking to Clara and all, and Clara could describe her personal effects, her favorite chair, and all such things like that, and Jack, I said, he was delighted at it.
And Jack had visited his part.
He lived there.
He lived in her
ashram. He lived in her ashram.
In Calcutta?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes, he lived.
He was
what was doing there?
Just living
in the
disciples.
He heard the Mahatma Sakyamuni here in town, same time Mama did. And after that, off to India.
He went to India. He didn't know just where he was going. He was going to be in Guru. He was there in search of Guru. But when he was still, what, 2 days out at sea, still at sea, he was out of the ship. Stern or proud of the ship, I don't remember which, but looking out over the ocean, and all of a sudden she appeared to him out of the water. And he still didn't know who she was, and so anyway, he got in there, he started inquiring about the
gurus and so on. This one fellow kept insisting he go to this particular guru, ashram. So finally he went there. And he went to this woman. And he found out it was a woman. And so here some people came up and kind of following a certain woman, and she walked by and she reached out deliberately, stepped on his foot.
Yeah. I don't know when that happens in India, what that means. When a spiritual person deliberately steps on the foot of a disciple, as a symbol of recognition of the soul. They don't do these things unless there's some inner recognition. So right away they realize that there's a connection between Amba and Mama.
And so he later found out who she was, and he became her disciple. Well, anyway, let's say he may come back over here. His father died and nothing, that would have come back over here. Okay. But I don't know how long he had been back over here before Clara met him. About, 3-4 years?
Yeah.
Something like that. And so he and his wife were getting divorced. He had married after he came back over here. It didn't work out. And he was going to Dallas. So on the way, I saw him on Sunday before he was to leave Tuesday, and I said, well, you're going to spend the night at my place. Well, he couldn't believe it. He just couldn't see how it was going to be possible. I was in Tomball at that time. So anyway, it worked out. He came by my place just for a short visit, but he wound up and we sat up all night long talking. And he met Clara. Again, Tuesday afternoon, and like I say, Jack and I sat up talking the all Tuesday night. And I was privileged to work with him on some things that he had problems. Then here, Wednesday morning, he was out in his car rummaging around trying to find his razor. And Clara comes tripping in and says, Monty told me to bring you this. I had a razor and everything, and Jack just sound bald. I said, Jack, you know, she's still looking at me. And he says, the strength and the love and something so insignificant, you know. And he really had a razor to say
this. You have to follow the guru. If the guru, any accepts you or she accepts you, if it is God, the form I'm meant to be, then if consciousness accepts the responsibility to take you back home into divinity, it doesn't matter where you are, time or space has nothing to do with now. You can be the other end of the world. This consciousness will find a way to make contact with it, to make you aware that it is taking care of you. Even if it's God and the body, that's it. In my life, I've seen so many things happen, but I don't question no more, I just accept. But they are taking care of the individual. It's a matter of just divorce, huh?
What is that thing? Yeah, of course, see, that Wednesday before Jack left, Clara got all upset. And she said, Monty told me something about that. And I'm afraid to tell him. Don't be afraid. I said, afraid of. But she's so bashful. She just doesn't want anyone to know this thing that comes to her. I mean, it's very few people to let her know. And so finally, she got up nerve enough. I think I had to hold her around by the shoulders, you know. And I was holding Jack's hand, and I was holding her, and I said, all right, now come on and say it. And Monty told him that he was in a terrific crisis, tested, and that if he would hold through to the teaching, in the next 3 years, it would be very difficult. And if he would remain true, then he would be allowed to do considerable work later.
And it's been about 3 years, then?
Oh, it's been more than 3 years.
Yeah.
I think.
Lord's work for wages is 65, not
no. No, I'm sorry, 163 when Timmy was assassinated.
Yeah, that's right.
You're right, Kennedy was assassinated in
63. I can hear it.
Get away from
that.
Well, Clara knew it. He came rushing to my clinic, you know, and Margaret, pray with me. And she said, I told my husband this morning that Kennedy was going to be killed, and he wouldn't believe me. She said, I know he's going to die. She said, I know. She said, come and boy, we kneel down right then. She said, he's passing right now. I know it. And that was just the time they laid him out.
And it wasn't on the radio at the time.
No, he hadn't been announced.
He was shot in Dallas and dying in the hospital, and she was living in Tomball, Texas, knowing it's going on all the time. Just going to show that it wasn't even announced in the radio how this consciousness is aware of what's going on.
You know, it's a strange thing, too, because I look back, I was supposed to be called a policeman the last past 3 exams in New York, in the police department. And after these experiences, you know, it's sort of ideas started to turn away from becoming a patrolman. And I tell you, I had a deep dislike for Dallas after I heard this Kennedy was killed. I think this is the last place in the world I ever thought of coming to, coming down to Texas. I mean, I had a real, this was very weird, someone other than Dallas, that had a deep revulsion for it. And
Conversation existed for her dream, and then the conversation existed for her, you know, I'm reading a book on meditation, and it starts to reading a book about that reincarnation thing like this. And the funny, I'm listening to the conversation, and I can't help myself laughing for what the things that she's saying, because it's so comical to see how she's gone through all these efforts. Well, my son leaves, and Jim, you know Jim? Came in. I was waiting for having a coffee, started waiting on the coffee, and he knows the woman. And he says to the woman, hello, come on over, she doesn't need a friend. What was the conversation? He says, well, you know, you'll be reading all that thing with Edgar Casey. I told you there's a man here who could explain a thing to you. And he said, he looks at me and he's like, well, he's been listening to me all the time. You know, that kind of feeling, you know, you're being watched. So I said, you have to meet, you know what I mean?
You know, this is the position that they would be Earth tremors around California area.
I will go to some parts which are mentioned in the autobiography.
There are a lot of places in only
God. Yeah, look, that's that place I have to go because that's only 40 miles from where Raj is. Raj's parents are.
So,
rather go there, I will go there.
Yes.
Very famous place.
Yes.
It's a small town, but it's famous because of the Guru.
Yeah.
I have to go there. Then I have to go to the UK. And I want to take my mother to the holy Ganges. I want to give a pilgrimage to my mother. That's one of the things I have to do. I think it's because of that yuga which has changed. You know, we are just out of Kali Yuga. Dwapar is one. Chidananda, we are in correspondence with him. Did Raj tell you? He's in Europe right now. And Raj has written again about 2 days back. What is the program? Because he got a letter from his secretary in Germany. He might come here in June. So, for 2 months, we did not hear from them. So, 2 or 3 days back, Raj has again written to us. So, we'll let you know.
That's yeah. Because why I like the
ocean floor from north to south, deep crack.
I like the by that time, I like the organization that I'm forming. Scott Interfaith Fellowship. We're trying to bring about all the various features. There is a common fellowship. All the various divisions can be welcome.
But I went to California before.
And first time to do the art of meditation. So, yes,
yeah.
Like it's because we lived by that time, we had to listen to the health sponsor lectures here in the area.
Actually, meditation is a common link between all the faiths, whether you are a Muslim or a Hindu or a Christian.
The atmosphere is so different. It's on the East Coast, too.
What?
The same feeling. When I was on the East Coast,
oh,
when
you know
I was
I
in
get
Virginia and Pennsylvania before.
Up in New York, I feel it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I feel it terrifically in Pennsylvania. And even the small town residents there in Pennsylvania, I feel about it. But I felt the offshore, the ships that are out there, which is the
Trafficking. So it's just a matter of studying the mind.
And there in California, I wonder if we gave him one somehow.
There's no ego in Northern
California. If
you
look closely enough, and if they are really striving to help bring some spiritual life, you know, light there as much as possible to them before we see it.
Mm-hmm. And why is he doing what the prayer is at?
Yoganan?
No, it's just... 10,000
new islands started.
I just wondered.
Well, see, the thing is this. Many of them you can see. That's how far you may go with them. If you don't see him, you gotta go far yet.
Keep going.
Yeah, until you go where he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't care to give anything that I hear that seems... in spite of what the other say.
Going back to
the
kind of worship that they had.
Like
well,
I might have been experiencing better vision, but you said stay on that, and I was going to stay on it just like I was going to bed.
No, what I meant was that don't let your mind associate with the thought of the past or the thought of the future. If you are, you're visiting it. But remember this, the whole purpose of meditation is to return home to God.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you see someone in the sight, this should be your first request, take me home to God. And then he will take you as far as he is going.
In God.
Now if you're satisfied how far he is gone, then that's where you stay. If you're not satisfied, you keep going and you keep saying, I want to go further. And some other masters come to take you further. Like going to school. Taking up
well,
to become a dean of, the dean of the university. So, okay, here's the courses,
But here's the thing. This summer, instead of going to school, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get something published so that keep me qualified.
Mm-hmm.
I even have to do that to go to school. And I don't relish going to school right now. And when you read this thing about Dr. Mercer, she's got her PhD. See, hers is a dissertation, mine is a thesis. And that mind is a failed experience.
Yeah.
She admits that she's not a student. And I want to branch out in my way.
No copy, huh?
No, what I mean is, in order to teach you, they don't want you to mind or crystallize, they want you to go back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fortunately, last year I went, so I took one course, so that frees me this summer. And this summer I want to spend, I've bought this much time, I want to spend during the mind.
Well, by the time you start building the action, the retreat, you start building the retreat.
And it will, and I have to, when you hurry up, publish your thing, at least I get credit for editing, so they say, oh, well, she is working, you know.
The whole thing is going to be you folks, because I don't know the English and everything.
Well, I mean, no, I said, at least they say, well, she's working. They just don't want you to stagnate, they want you to go back to the farm. But as you said about Africa, in other words, some of these things, they tell you all the facts about them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I stress
the mystics.
Sometimes
you see the mystic part of life is the real part of life because it has to do with intuition and abstraction from the physical to the spiritual. It's stepping aside and let the spiritual work. In other words, the students are not only getting an intellectual education, they're getting a spiritual education.
I don't care where I go,
this reading states as they gathered all the references together, so they correlated them. So it's not the
food, it's
the violence eruptions. Now, really terrific eruptions.
I had a kid get up at 5 o'clock this morning. Mama got us up and got me up at 6 in the morning. She said, stay up, you know.
California,
the
best thing is that the kids are in the ocean. Now, the American Indian predictions, they've been here. Ola Robbins in Arizona, she has been constantly inhabited for over 10,000 years. The reproductions have been since before then. They're dropping with them from the Muriel. The American Indian predictions are that as the man begins to climb the stars,
the Indian
were watching when the first
time. Oh, I went home. What? God didn't do for me.
Well, then, when Mauna Loa in the Hawaiian Islands erupts, the violent eruption, there will be 30 days before the cyclone.
These eruptions, like these earth disturbances, coincide with the attitudes of human society.
It looks that way, then.
You know?
Well, you're hitting something very close. Not complete yet.
Well, this is what I told Mr. Curry the other day that I thought too, that nature expresses man's emotions in different ways.
You see, what's the first thing of it?
Art.
I thought it was art. So I wasn't positive it was art. You know, I said last night. The art, the ancient sages have long said that we are not living anything new in this earth. We are going through cycles. This whole universe is all built on cycles. Now, what we are building today at Caltech Space Programs, we have done it many cycles before. This is nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
We're only doing it better each cycle.
That's what you
understand. And each cycle, all that we have is recorded history is four ages. The Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and the Iron Age. Now, but we can only record in the receding arc of this these ages. We can't seem to have any reference as to the ascending arc. What occurred before? There is no recorded history available. It hasn't been dug up yet as to what occurred before. But we only have information as we come down the scale backwards. So at the present level of our archaeological research and understanding, we are just starting off now into a new Bronze Age. We're in the Bronze Age yet. It's just starting. We just came out of the Iron Age. Now, in Oriental writings, it's called Kali Yuga. Yuga meaning cycle or age, and Kal or Kali meaning dark. In the Middle Ages, where men resorted to killing each other over religious ideas, that was your Dark Ages. And it ended just about roughly 100-some-odd years ago. But we are now ascending into what is called Dwapara, or the Aquarian Age, according to Western astrological writings. But we are not in that age yet until the year 2000. We are just in what is called the mutation period, or the cut. A little of the Dark Ages is with us, and a little of the New Age is with us. Now, what we are discovering in this present age is the electrical principle of matter. That is nothing new as far as the ancient sages are concerned. This is something that they knew so well and went backwards. Now we are assuming that we are so enlightened that we are going forward. You see, the thing is, but the great sages are said.
The more you know, the more, instead of you progressing toward unity, you're just accelerating towards the primitive stage.
Right. Now, the next stage, you see, all we are going to discover in the next 2,000 years of Gaffara cycle is all the intricacies of the electron. Now, when we get into the Silver Age, which we call the Silver Age of Treta, we're going to discover all the principles of magnetism. But within the next 2,000 years, we're going to know a little of magnetism. We don't know much as far as how magnetism really works and what concept we have of magnetism. Mm-hmm. It's like a pin drop to what the ancient sages knew of magnetism. You see? And they have writings in the Vedas and the various Puranas and all the different religious writings that we use based on the laws of magnetism that we can't even begin to decipher yet.
If you discover, if you broke down that theory, you have your theory into planetary travel. Right. And knowing magnetic forces of the planet. And this is why I believe that there is some 69 flying forces, because I think they've mastered that theory. It's not a figment, friend. These
brothers have all got off the planet when this planet was going through its convolution. How old is this planet? 4.5 billion years. You mean to tell me man has only been here 5,000 years according to the Jewish Bible? Ain't kind of ridiculous? Then an Indian out in the reservation claims he's been living on a piece of land for 10,000 years and he's got stone writings to prove it? It's all kind of ridiculous. One part of the earth says, here I am a man living here over 10,000 years. Here is record from the way I can talk. And the other guy jumps off and says, well, I've been living on my piece of land for only 5,000 years. So
yeah.
There are those puzzles many of our astrophysicists that go up there and at a reservation. They can't figure it out. These people are for nuts.
The astronomers, you know,
as far as
now, they're finding
these things out with a Hopi jewelry, you know, with the canals of Mars all drawn out in detail. And you show these guys, but they said, but where were these people getting these things? Where's the telescope to photograph these things? You ask the Indian, he says, you have a telescope. See? But the thing is, we're finding out that we are on the back end of the last golden age is done. We're not on the ascending end. See, on the ascending end, man was living closer to the totality of life by consciousness. Today he's trying to produce the totality of life by mechanical means. He's not capable of seeing the totality of consciousness by his imperial awareness. Now, since he's starting to ascend the scale again, we will begin to experience this.
Like in the days of Moses when he was on the mountain, they made a golden idol and they began to worship him. I think that's just going on now. Everyone works in science, works in the atoms, works in money. And so they set up, you know, in other words, they just formed new gods, you know. And so he begins to react. I think that he lets man's evil get to its highest point, and then he begins to send warnings. In other words, he works in two stages. Criticism, and then condemnation, and then destruction. It's not criticism. It's another word for criticism. I can't think of it. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say. And when he sends you different symbolic expressions of warning,
he defies science, you know, he sends you defying science, like these flashes in the sky, they fly across his eye. No one can figure them out, not even scientists. All they can say is his aerial phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sends blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows what the blackouts are. They say it's not even scientifically possible. You know, that all these things can happen simultaneously all over the country. Right, so then if you don't heed these warnings, then you send this other sign. And those aren't even such destruction.
You see, Master Yogananda and Sri Yukteswar wrote a book called The Holy Science. And in this book, he gives you a total structure of creation from the very consciousness right down to the atom. But this is not a one-way street, this is a two-way street. How to get back there, not just to drop down and be a dropout down here and get held up in this physical frame. Is how to get back there, how to creep back up. Well, all the signs that are happening were happening before. It was not the act of a dictatorial god doing it. They are happening because these are the various levels of evolution and cycles that the planets are passing through. Now, this solar system that we have, this Earth, Moon, stars, and the Sun, and this and the planet Neptune and Mercury, all this particular solar system revolves around a grand center. That is, it uses another star in the galaxy as a central focal point to revolve around. Now, a planet does not become a star until it has reached a complete 7 billion years. Then it starts decomposing, either by one of two reasons. The inhabitants get so good that they don't need it no more, or they get so evil that they don't know what to do with it among themselves. And then that planet breaks up. Now it's going to break up first by the entire good through cosmic consciousness. There is no need for them to stay there no more because they've all left the planet. They've all returned back into their higher self, so the planet becomes barren and starts to decompose. Now, if it is decomposing by negative thought, then it starts to burn. The decomposition triggers it up and it becomes now into a star.
You know, it sounds when you explain the Earth as a living creature too.
Yeah.
It reacts to humanity.
Well, I'll tell you something now. All right. There's a simple verse in the autobiography. Mm-hmm. You start realizing yourself more and more. Because if you realize that you are the atom returning back to divinity, and in the process of this journey, you are unleashing higher and higher forces of energy and consciousness, and creation is a composite of consciousness and energy, you begin to realize that you are automatically triggering off reactions in the environment. Now, if your consciousness is negative, you're going to have negative repercussions. If your consciousness is positive, you're going to have positive repercussions. All right. Let's say this may be far-fetched. Let's take an immediate thing that has just been discovered or accepted. The sages have said, or yogis have said, that they can control their bodies with their mind. Doctors are jumping now and say, it is possible that these yogis weren't so stupid after all. You are shifting the pulse rate, they can do many things with their bodies. All right, well, let's see. That's only now being reaffirmed in this so-called enlightened age.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take it one step further. That individual that is doing this particular illustration, if he's not a fully realized master, or one who is totally merged in this 360-degree consciousness, can do that. Just shift any little part of his body and create a reaction. Let's say he has total consciousness, 360-degree awareness. and shares it to degree, comprehension and vision. What would be the magnitude of this consciousness and matter? It'd be like Jesus, be thou still and don't move, and the waves remain parted. You understand? Now, people say this sounds kind of ridiculous. It's all figure of speech that Jesus held back the waves. You know, they got a bunch of people who say that, you know. And others will, no, he did move it. He did stop the waves. Pick your choice. It's easy to believe blindly that he did stop the waves. It's easy to ignore it and deny that he didn't do it. Or it would be wise to inquire into its scientific validity and see the possibility of it being done and the possibility of being able to do it. Because in his teachings, he shows the possibility of doing it. And if he did do it, and centuries after, another man comes along and says that the greater you realize, the more you realize yourself, the more you'll have an ability to influence creation. Well, that ocean was, or that river is H2O in a big water hole, and the wind was just stirring it up and threatening the lives of a few people. So that is a form of creation. And the realization that he was consciousness, that he had this ability, he was able to influence it. Now, he is not the only master that has held back the wave from destroying the disciples. Throughout the history of the East, there are so many writings where they've had teachers in the time of Egypt. They had many Egyptian masters that did the same thing. That's why they were amazed at Moses with his tricks. They were just like, come on, Moses, now, you're stealing our tricks. You were trying to copy us, you see. They were aware of all these things. But in Moses' case, when he did apply his knowledge over the Egyptian masters, it was the masters of Egypt were not involved in saving any group of people. In his case, he had a purpose, a dedication to bring his people out of bondage, and therefore he had a greater challenge. He had to have a greater objective to do the thing. He had to have a greater purpose of performing those principles. So his motive was more idealistic than the Egyptian masters. The Egyptian masters had the same motive and could produce the same phenomena or the same ability. But it was not as idealistic in terms of application as Moses was. And you have the same thing in Martin Luther King. The people in Alabama, the police around that, their motive is not idealistic, so they would not challenge or do anything to stir it up. But his motive is idealistic because he's trying to bring his people out of a particular condition. And this is where the sacrifice or the involvement becomes greater in itself. What motivates the person to move the thing? And this is where the realization comes in. That's why when Jesus says, what it benefits you to gain the whole world and lose your soul, is if your motives are strictly for a personal material gain, to use these spiritual forces for that, then it's kind of ridiculous. But if the motive is to uplift mankind, then there is a purpose. Now you have a case of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi never used none of these spiritual forces to liberate his people. Yet when he was shot, you wanted to see a great miracle? The moment he was shot, two tears fell from his eyes on a reporter's shoe and burned two holes right through them, like if it was acid. And the reporter who was standing up there wrote a book called Lead Kindly Light.
Vincent Sheen, he was a New York reporter who was within 2 yards of the assassination thing. And if you don't have the patience to read the whole book, read those 2 pages. Just read those 2 pages.
What he saw there utterly changed his life.
Completely changed his life. The other two.
That's what I say. The man never applied, never had the motive to apply his spiritual force to liberate his people. But after at that point, it goes to show you that God never leaves nothing undone. Even people may not consider him a Mahatma in the outside world. His people call him the Mahatma. And he considers his Mahatma as just as much as if you put a cap on his head. But his real Mahatmahood came out at his assassination because it proved that the man was there in that consciousness. that his motive was pure. If he wanted to liberate his people by miraculous powers and drive the English people out of India, he could have well have done it. But he never did resort to it. You see? And I think the same thing is true in King's death. You only see the beauty of King's life is in his death. You don't see the beauty until that point comes up. That's what you call the sacrifice. You don't see these men's lives truly until you see that moment of sacrifice.
Same with Jesus. His message is highlighted in his
story. Right, it has to. All these great men come to that point. And I think this is what the idealism is. I mean, it's only in death there is life. Because the seed must die in order to bring forth fruit. Well, coming back to what you're saying about the cycles, we're not going to see much knowledge right now in the next 2 years concerning magnetism, as Sri Yukteswar said. We will have some knowledge, not the total knowledge of magnetism. And we see a little of the power of magnetism in Yogananda when he found Kashi. You read that part where he found Kashi and where he was going to be reborn?
Oh.
In the autobiography? You know, Kashi was a student of Yogananda.
Oh, yes.
And then Kashi died.
Yes.
Because he ate some poisoned food.
That's right, yes. No.
Then, before he died, and Yogananda told him he was going to die,
yes.
The kid says to Yogananda, would you bring me back to the spiritual path? If I die, would you find my soul
and
bring it back to the spiritual path? Don't let it hang around in spirit. Well, you know, that's quite a request to ask a spiritual teacher.
Sure.
Unless the spiritual teacher is in tune, he can say yes or no.
Sure.
So Yogananda said yes, he would do it. Now, the boy ate the poison food and did die. And right there, Yogananda realized his obligation.
And he was born as
a Alright, but the thing is this. Here is not a principle of energy that is involved. Here is a principle of magnetism that is involved. Because the technique he used was a magnetism technique. Out of the teeming billions of souls in this entire universe that is hovering around waiting for human bodies to be born into in order to realize God, he's got to locate it like a kind of a radar system. He's got to send out magnetic waves to pick up that soul frequency and pick it up and attract it, which he did. He applied a technique of magnetism that is going to take many centuries for people to develop by generating it from the heart. He sent this magnetism out through the heart and into the fingers, and man has this ability when he realizes himself in meditation that he can do it. The average man may not be able to do it, but the person who can meditate can generate this energy. So he did send this magnetic energy out. And in the teeming billions of people on this planet and in the atmosphere, he picked up the exact location where the soul of Kashi was and started to attract it until he found where the soul was going to be born in a human body. And when it was born, imagine his dilemma to walk up and tell the guy that his wife is going to get a baby, and the baby is going to be a boy, and the boy is going to have a certain description. You know, that kind of scared a guy. But the only respect he had for him is because he was dressed like a priest. So he saw him in the robe, and then he accepted the man's statement. And when the boy was born, he gave him back his old name as Kashi, and the boy recognized him. Then he asked him if he would stay with him and teach him. But he said no, he sent him to another master. Now here is an interesting aspect. If he was the master and he did all this, why would he not retain the youth with him to teach him? Why would he send him to another master?
I think that boy has to go through his own karma.
Right.
Whatever he has acquired from the previous life, he has to live with that for the few years that he is on this earth.
Mm.
and then pass on to the next life to resume the journey, sort of.
Yes, he has to work out that karma, and by going with another master, that karma that would require a different type of discipline that he would need.
That's right. In any case, when he passed away due to the poisonous food, he probably didn't have a spiritual guru at that stage.
Right.
That spiritual guru, according to me, would have had the power to save him from the death from poison.
Right.
But since he didn't have, nature took its own course. But then Yogananda had the power to pick up his soul due to the power of magnetism, as he said, and let him be born in a particular circumstance of his liking.
Yes, this is true, because see, the master was not his guru at the time.
That's right.
He was just staying at the ashram and trying to learn. So he wasn't initiated or anything, so he was not initiated, so the master did not assume the responsibility of carrying him back home. But
the time when the master himself was a boy,
yes,
isn't it?
Well, no, he was about 27 years of age.
When he came here, this was about the time when he was getting ready to come here.
Yeah, that's about the time he was going
to
come.
Yeah, but completely realized master at that point, or did his realization come about through the spirit of evolution from his adult age up to the time when he acquired the Nirvikalpa Samadhi? You know, according to me, let me complete the sentence, if you don't mind. According to me, there are two kinds of masters. The one class is that are sent by the divine power to earth to preach Godhood and the religious sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind of masters are those who take birth in human form of their own accord.
Mm-hmm.
They have been merged with God,
mm-hmm.
they are God themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they come here of their own power,
mm-hmm.
of their own free will to do good.
Mm-hmm.
It's my impression, and I don't know how far you will agree, that Paramahansa Yogananda belongs to the first class.
Mm-hmm.
He came here by the bidding of God, at God's will, and not of his own.
No.
And then after he passed this life, this was his last incarnation, he became God himself.
Yeah.
And second, now that he comes, if he comes,
yeah.
it will be on his own free will.
But it is mentioned in the book there that
in
the autobiography, when Sri Yukteswar had so much compassion for the Western world at the Kumbh Mela, and he was standing next to Babaji, and Babaji called him Swami.
Yes.
And he said, I'm not a Swami, I'm just a yogi. He says, who I have bestowed the title of Swami, no one throws it off. So he says, yeah, all right. So he recognizes him. He says, I see you have a great concern for the people of the West. He says, I will send you a soul that you will train for yoga dissemination in the West. Now the soul wasn't born, because Swamiji at that time, he was just in his early 40s. Yukteswar was in his 40s.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't meet Yogananda until he was in his 50s or 60s.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so Yukteswar was already trying to have an understanding for the consideration for the people of the West. So this validates what you're saying in the first, that the Yogananda comes under the first category. He was commissioned to go by God.
That's right.
And so when he was born in the body, the link of masters, his parents, was already linked to the guru of Sri Yukteswar.
Sure, the path was already laid by
him. Because Sri Yukteswar was a disciple of Lahiri Mahasaya.
Yes.
And Lahiri Mahasaya was a disciple of Babaji, and the true Lahiri Mahasaya, Sri Yukteswar, heard of Babaji.
Yes.
So that when he went to the Kumbh Mela to meet Babaji, and got this title, and then got this compassion, now he's told that he's going to send him somebody to train. So the boy is born to a set of parents who are disciples of Sri Yukteswar's guru. So Sri Yukteswar and the boy's parents are brother disciples of the same guru.
That's right.
You see? Now, he comes along and lives so close to that guru, and didn't even know the guru was living right next to him.
Sure.
And he had to go all the way to Benares to find the guru.
That's right. This is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting.
This is the chain of events to show that why in that category, he sent to attain the God realization in the body and to bring man back. Now, the next incarnation would be of his own volition.
Yeah, this is what my impression was.
That's why he said, I'll come again and again and again and take you home to my Father which is in heaven.
Right.
He says that this coming again and again is not of, what you call it now, of any divine command, because this is he has achieved that realization of God now to come down into man. You see, Krishna said the same thing too. I will come again and again to restore righteousness when unrighteousness takes over.
You know, I'm not a great orator, as you know, my speech is not clear at all.
But when Swami was to come,
because I was sponsoring him for the state of Texas and he was going to be there for 8 days at my invitation.
Wonderful.
I was feeling very jerky about how to introduce him to the audience. And you know, in the audience there are very many learned people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite possible that you could be in the audience, you know, because if you are well, mm-hmm. we would have requested you to come. And
sure.
And it would be so embarrassing for me to speak in an audience where people like you are sitting, you know.
Oh, no.
But so what I did is that I wrote up 3 pages and typed it, double space and capital letters, the whole speech. And I said that before I introduce the Swami to you, I would like to say a few words about the mission he represents and the philosophy he advocates. And then I said that those of you in the audience who are familiar with the Hindu scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita,
yeah.
know what the Lord tells Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna tells us, you know, in the battlefield, then I quoted that piece from chapter 4,
yeah.
whenever righteousness is in danger, I manifest myself in human form
mm-hmm.
and take care of the situation.
Right.
Then I said that in India of mid-19th century, there was so much of religious chaos
mm-hmm.
that at least that's what the world needed, an avatar. And Sri Ramakrishna appeared in a small village in Bengal and lived a very quiet and holy life and showed the path. Then he left his 2 disciples, one of whom came to Chicago at the World Conference.
Yeah.
And then I put in my speech a little extract from his closing address to the Parliament of Religions in Chicago.
Yeah.
Then I said a few words about the Ramakrishna Mutt and the Ramakrishna Mission, and then a couple of paragraphs about the Swami. So this thing that whenever that righteousness is in danger
yeah.
and decays, I will manifest myself.
Again.
I took out some.
Sure, but that is true.
Because I wanted to introduce Ramakrishna as an avatar.
Right.
As a truth.
Yeah, where the source of this thing is from.
Yes.
Well, that is good.
But every time, you know, I came on the stage, I introduced him about 5 or 6 times. I wasn't feeling very calm. I was rather shaky.
But the thing is this. You're saying if any the facts of the thing, because anyone would read into the writings of the and they go back to Ramakrishna writings,
yeah.
they will see that particular period. Now this is very important. It plays up a lot to many people too.
But there was tremendous response.
Oh yeah.
There was tremendous response. I didn't expect to meet so many people.
Yeah.
That much contact that I got.
Oh,
the Swami in one or two meetings said that those who want to follow up the subject should read the Cracked Jewel of Discrimination,
mm-hmm.
Vivekananda Sudamani by Shankaracharya,
mm-hmm.
recently translated by Swami Madhavananda.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, he said he had published a book which has not yet come to this country by the name of Message of Upanishad.
Mm-hmm.
This is a condensation of several speeches addressing the issues continuously.
Mm-hmm.
And you should have seen how many people phoned me
yeah.
to get their orders in.
Sure.
And I've already ordered the 40 copies of Cracked Jewel of Discrimination
yeah.
because it was available with the Swami Prabhananda
yeah.
of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I've ordered 35 copies of
yeah.
the other books already.
I'd like to
share my financial.
Sure, you'll get it. But no, the thing is that more and more people are trying to inquire into this knowledge.
Very, very, very seriously, you
know. You see, the thing is, Jack, the Masters have said this is the New India. Because we are on the ascending scale now
yes.
of the cycles.
Okay.
And India in India is going through its own internal baptism, and the Masters are coming out to cleanse out what has gone through the period of culture that they've come out of. So they have their own internal karma to work out. But many of the advanced souls who have been born in the West, that were once Hindus, who had lived this path of life before with the Gurus, they are given an opportunity to understand the difference between the spiritual and the physical for the first time. You see, many of the devotees in the East have neglected the material only for the spiritual due to Kali Yuga. It's not that they did not know of material life in Dwapara and Treta and Satyug. They knew of all that. In Satyug they were the highest, wealthiest nation at one time.
Sure.
So, but it's because of Kali Yuga, the poverty and the disease and the decay came in. So the only escape that they had was to crystallize themselves in spiritual literalism, not in spiritual sadhana.
Yeah, not in spiritual ethan,
right,
just some symbolic form.
Thing,
yeah.
So they are going through now what's called a revival now.
That's right.
But those souls that are born in those cycles, that have reached out with the understanding, they've been born now in this new realm, because to get have an opportunity to spread it. That's why you see they say this is the new India. That's why the masters are leaving India now to come to this part of the region.
You renounce your physical things when you have acquired them.
Right.
Of your own free
will. Right.
That's the thing is that of your own
free will. Because you know the limitations of all these things, and you yourself can cut yourself from them. But and he used to say, you know, you can't renounce what you never experienced. And life is all experiences. Umpteen lives we need to discover the many experiences. See? So we are given an opportunity in this new era to return to that true sadhana and that true inner dharma. And that is why the masters have sent him to the West to spread the teaching, to make us conscious now how to realize ourselves and at the same time how to finally go into God realization.
Right, I'm just going to leave the fly because his karma is a fly. I mean, he goes to a higher form of consciousness.
See, so the master knew this, that his work would be brought to bring the people in this part up to a certain level. What he knew when he left, there were other masters that would be coming who would take them on to the next level. And all depending on what level you want to go to. So there was no such thing as he was the last master.
No.
Most people got the wrong impression that he was the last master.
This is, you see, the limit to which we surround ourselves.
Right.
The resurrection of Sri Yukteswar. Mm-hmm. And so many techniques there. Every page. You know, the other day we went out to see this movie Ben-Hur.
Uh-huh.
And it was a long movie, 4-hour movie, so we had a babysitter to come here. And Raj suggested to the babysitter that instead of watching TV, instead of watching TV and wasting your time and eyes, why don't you read the autobiography of a yogi? So he started reading. When we came back, he was still reading it, you know, so absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, can I take it home and finish it and complete it?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, please do. And then I said that if you feel at some time that you cannot read the whole book, please read these chapters. These are very important. Then one is about the Jar Parmiatic Mother.
Yeah.
About the resurrection of Sri Yukteswar and his meeting with Gandhi in Wardha in 1935 at the Peace Reserve. So she took it. She was very happy.
What age was
she? She was 15 or 16 year old girl.
Wonderful.
She was, she said that today instead of watching TV, you know, just try to read this if it is interesting for you or not. She said all these 4 hours you are reading that book.
I was taking care of my father when he came to me, he had a stroke. And I read that book, been waiting on him like a little baby, and cooking for the children, and Arnold? From that glass morning until the next day,
glass of juice.
You know, it's a matter of time. In 1964, I believe, I went to the Chicago Public Library, and there I saw this book.
Yeah.
And Raj was looking at it. I said, what is that? Some crank yogi, you know, writing autobiographs. And you have seen so many yogis about India. All the ego in us dismissed it completely. Here, you know, we come and barely 15 days in Dallas, and we went to this gentleman. You have been to his house.
Mr. Bori?
No, that other Indian gentleman, Ashok.
Oh, Mr. Ashok, yes.
Ashok Khilani.
Yeah, nice.
And how he said, have you read this autobiography of the yogi? I said, no, I have seen a copy in the thing and it never interested me. He said, I have got Helen Landrich's copy here.
Yeah.
It's not my copy, but I have read it. It's very interesting. Why didn't you take it and read it? So I took it home and Raj, she just devoured it.
Yeah.
So in 2 days she finished it and I took 2 months to read it because this material is very interesting.
Yeah.
I read it very slowly, very slowly. I don't want to leave it.
No.
And I just got told on the okay. And then he said that they put out lessons. Would you be interested? I said, yes, very well. So I'm taking lessons now. It's almost a year and a half that I've been taking them. And this thing about magnetism that you are talking about, these are the lessons that I'm taking, lessons 48 and 49. He says the art of cultivating magnetism, part one and then part two.
Right.
And those are exactly the same that you're
when Maharaji was here, you know, Charan Singh was here in the States, one fellow walked up to him and asked him, Maharaji, is there any truth to these UFOs? And Maharaji looked at him and said, they are coming here and you are going there. Nothing to worry about. You don't know, make no bones about it. He says, they are coming here and you are going there.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about it. Because it seems that this is a natural thing.
Well, any of the actually,
the yoga now is the Yogananda wrote a book. It's not published. There are several books that are not published. Life on the Planet. Interplanetary Travel. And I saw those manuscripts all in that house, you know, they're all in longhand. Big pile of manuscripts. Scriptural interpretation of this Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
This is God Talks to Arjuna. That's the name of the title. Then the scriptural interpretation of the Christian Bible, the Mohammedan Bible, Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, There's a whole pile of books which are on Zoroastrian. But they're not published yet, because the reason why not published, in his will, they were not supposed to be published until certain physical manifestations took place on this earth and space. By that time, man would be ready to understand the writings where they're involved.
I think in those books which are not published, there are certain revelations mm-hmm. which he does not want people to know mm-hmm. right now.
Well, I know from what I've read on the Bhagavad Gita, his writings on the Bhagavad Gita, I have not yet to find any translation or interpretation in the Bhagavad Gita as scientific as this yet. The way he starts out alone, if you don't have to be religious. If you're scientific-minded, you don't want to put the book down.
Mm-hmm.
Because he goes right away to the science of the thing. And the part there, where it mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the astral forces of man are locked up in the hair.
Indeed?
Hair. Now, you remember Samson was not supposed to cut his hair, and he defeated his enemies with the jawbone of an ass, right? Now, how big would Samson would have to be that he can destroy so many people with the jawbone of an ass? Without getting tired.
There were thousands here, remember?
Right. Now, this man, Samson, had to live a certain way. And it's in the Bhagavad Gita, only in the Bhagavad Gita, you're going to understand Samson. Why Samson was like that. Because it goes into the scientific thing. That Samson was a Nazarene. No, an Essene. He was an Essene. And the Essenes were the yogis of the Hebrew religion. They were the ones who were practicing the fasting and doing all the religious rites, not eating, vegetarian, not doing, and devoting themselves to intensive meditation. And he reached that high state of samadhi where the hair was converted into energy, like Sai Baba. You know, Sai Baba's hair, they can't cut it, you know. A man offered to go cut Sai Baba's hair, and he said, "Baba, you look your hair, you need a haircut." He says, "All right, sir, give me the haircut." So the fellow goes and takes his scissors, and he cuts the hair, and the scissors fall apart.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's recorded yet?
Yeah. Three times he tried to cut the man's hair. After the third scissors broke up, he says he gave up, tried to cut Sai Baba's hair off. So Sai Baba says, "Well, I'm stuck with my hair, so he's not going to cut the scissors." See how his hair looked big and bushy?
Big and they are sort of standing on end all
right.
The time.
Last year,
you can't do them like this.
Last year, some skeptic was sitting down in the crowd, he says, and Sai Baba looked at him and says, "You think you can cut my hair? Okay, here's the scissors." So he got up with the enthusiasm and go try and cut Sai Baba's hair. He made like that, and the scissors broke. After two attempts, he gave up. He realized that this is not an ordinary person. Well, see, in Samson's case, because he kept this secret to himself and did not release it by word of mouth to no one, the actual valve or the actual physic force was still locked in him. So the astral power was still locked up in the hair. And he drew the astral energy into his body by the hair. So when he was attacked by his enemies, he could never get tired. There was no way for his body, physical body, to become tired because his hair was drawing photosynthetically the energy right away. It was drawing this cosmic energy into his body. So he had the strength of 9 or 10 men in him. For every man that rushed him, he had this power coming into him. Well, one day, Yogananda, and Yogananda was only 5'4", you know, not a tall man, but a big husky guy. And he was sitting in a park. And a guy came up to him and said, "Give me a money." So he handed him the money. The guy walked away and came up, "Give me a money." He handed him the money. So the third time he's coming. Okay. Give me a money. So he gave him a dollar. And the fourth time he came back, Yogananda got off the chair and says, "Get out!" The man was converted on the spot. Because this man was a big, towering, burly guy, and he saw this short guy, and the force that passed through that short man was enough to bowl him over the ground and knock him upside down with his voice. The power that came through turned hit the guy over. So you can realize that the energy was passing through the master's hair into his body. The same way that the energy was passing through Samson's hair into his body. That when Samson was enraged by being attacked by the Philistines, his whole concentrated forces charged up. And that his physical body was not really doing anything. This is purely psychic energy. The pure cosmic energy was passing through his body, and wielding that jackass jawbone was just a means of warding off the blows, but his consciousness alone could have knocked down these people. He had the inner awareness. But until he gave up the secret, until he verbally released the energy and said, "Cut the hair," it couldn't be cut. He had to release that thing. And then when he released it, then the girl cut the hair. But then to show you, the hair grew back, bringing back the energy. But he was blinded. But he was the peculiar thing about Samson was this. When he was being blinded, this was his statement, "Lord, thou art taking away my physical sight that I may see thee better within." Now you go figure that statement out. If this man was not truly deeply involved in spiritual mystical study, mm-hmm. to appreciate the loss of physical sight to gain inner sight.
You see, some blind men see better than
mm-hmm.
the third eye.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the third eye where you see. Just to sit down to develop the third eye is not really anything.
No,
your experience of consciousness is the third eye. This is what we're talking about, 360 degree vision. It's not a matter of sitting down to develop that vision. It's a matter of being a channel for that vision. There's a big difference. See, some people may spend all their lives trying to develop or force this condition of this vision to come on and only get about a few degrees of it. But to be a channel for this vision to pour in, it's a big difference.
Unknowingly, Jack brought some of his, and I brought mine, too. So Jack left a little piece of mine this morning, and that's what he said on the phone. He said, "I told you that it's just Christian, that this is over Christian." And he said, "You know what that is?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "It's my thing." And she said, "Anyway, this guy is one day, he said, well, what happened?"
Well, that's good for Shad. But that's what we see, but that's for Shad.
Yes.
It has the vibration
right.
In it.
Now, I was going to say we can break it up.
Mm-hmm.
So
just pass it around.
Well, let me break it up a little
bit. See, Prasad is what is holy food. Spiritual master blesses the food. He don't bless it in the sense that we think. They don't pray over food. After you reach a certain degree of realization in yourself, you know that you are consciousness and energy. And consciousness and energy passes through the body in a vital radio magnetic process. Now, in the form of heat. Now, normally, in the normal eyes, we may not see the transformation. Someday when we get certain machines developed, we will see this as a result of transferring this consciousness to matter. Food, when it's cooked, its rate of vibration is lowered. Its electrical content is lowered. Now, to pray over it by mere words would not raise its electrical content back to a frequency in which it has some dynamic action in your mechanism. But if you are realizing yourself through certain techniques of meditation, you can transfer this magnetic energy into it, and this energy will raise it. And in time, scientists will write up an article saying that the potentiality of matter can be raised from its dormant state to its kinetic state without utilizing any machine. Mm-hmm. The mere fact that now, this is exactly what Jesus did to the two fishes and the bread. He raised this magnetic ratio to such a point that the thing became self-multiplying. But this is because how realized the person is. The power is there available to him.
Just like Elijah, you know, blessing the cruise of oil.
Mm-hmm.
And Nina, you know, the widow that had pain, so she would never give that oil to Nina. Mm-hmm.
There was a girl who lived at SRF in California. And she's a good Christian girl. And she grew up in the Catholic Church. And she's often wondered about the feeding of the thousands, you know. If this is really a possible thing with Jesus, or if it's just a trigger of imagination or some kind of allegory. So one day she's staying with Paramsa Yogananda at the ashram. And there were about 36 people came to visit him from out of town. Well, she was in charge of the office with her. So he said to her while during the session of conversation, would she throw some carrot juice? So she went to the fridge, and there was just about this much in the fridge of carrot juice. And there were no more carrots. And she went downstairs, there were no carrots, and they'd have to go out and buy a pile of carrots and make carrot juice for 36 people. So she came back and told the master quietly that there is no carrot juice. The master looked at her and said, would you please serve some carrot juice? What would you do? You take out 36 glasses and try to pour 36?
Well, it depends on whether you believe him or not. You would probably, some people would think he was crazy, or some people would just say, well, because he said it, there must be a meaning or reason why he said it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, just trust him.
Mm-hmm. Alright, but let's picture you in the position, you the guy who got to go take this much juice and get there 36 people a day, including yourself and him. And he asked you to serve it. Quite a test, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Alright. She went and got the 36 cups. All her no matter. He's back, so he wants that car juice. What am I going to do? I'm trying to fool these 36 with a little of everything. See if I can get 36 of it. So, put the 36 cups and start pouring. She filled the 36 cups and still had a whole cup left over. And she was trembling with the tray by the time she got out there and served the 36 people the car juice, including the mass and herself. By the time she got back in, she never wished again in her life to see another miracle. And then the master said to her, not too long after, he says, it's not your faith made it possible. It was only because you had to be freed from it. In other words, he didn't do it in order to satisfy her to see the fact that such a miracle did exist, or such a principle did exist. It was done strictly to free her from thinking that way. You see, in some people, right.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, many things I believe were definitely impossible. So after I went through certain things, and I think even today I still believe that I was losing my mind until I began to find literature.
A lot of it,
literature explaining in detail the things that I went through and things I would go through. I found sort of like a roadmap in recent years. In fact, one book I read on St. John the Cross, when he said that when you reach a certain state,
to understand that the perfume is the love of God permeating us all the time. And you will find this in the presence of all the masters, all the saints. There's a perfume that permeates their presence.
You know, when I told someone about this, is why I refrain from ever talking about it to only to very, very few people. Because when I told one person about it, he said it was your imagination or your sense, your
your development of concentration. You said there's far the things that you're able to do on your own accord. You know, and I didn't agree with that. I didn't believe that it was my mind doing these things. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew better. But he kept insisting that it was my mind, you know.
That is the typical Freudian psychological description.
Right.
It's like you say, you know, Master used to say this. Those who want to get tall cut off the heads of others. Yeah? Those who want to get tall cut off the heads of others. So in order to impress you that your knowledge or your experience was invalid or of no way, he wants to make you feel that you were conjuring this thing up of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want to accept the reality that this thing could come from some other source,
mm-hmm.
and that you could have been just a mere channel for the thing. That's like the story of the fox, you see. The fox got caught in a trap and no way to get out, so he bit off his tail. And he looked around and he saw it was a nice thing. He had to tell everybody a tailless fox is a beautiful thing. Well, all the rest says, hey buddy, that's yours, not ours. That's your experience. Isn't it?
Same thing when I began to understand how Aristotle's theories on design and construction of the universe and how St. Thomas Aquinas used Aristotelian thought to discover God's presence in the universe. He said, you know, nothing can bring it, from nothing comes nothing. He said, the design and construction of the universe for a meaning, reason, and purpose. And while I was thinking of Aristotle, I was going back to my room, and I looked up in the sky, and the wind started to move the cloud and formed this figure of Aristotle's head. I could see his beard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I stood there, like, when I told this fellow, you know, he began to say, it's my thoughts, it's my imagination that formed. In other words, your
you're
mind is able to...
You're seeing Rorschach in blood, in clouds, huh?
What?
You say you're seeing Rorschach ink blots in the forms of clouds.
Mm-hmm.
That would be his summation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you ever see a Rorschach test?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this would be his summation because you are seeing this thing in the clouds. So he jumps to that conclusion as a means to analyze your experience.
Mm-hmm.
All his life, you see, the thing is life.
Is your camera? Is it your camera now?
Yeah, you want to see?
Some pictures in
there? There's an empty one in there, you can use it.
Who would like to take the picture? Because I want to be photographed. I want to be another side.
Come on over.
Oh,
turn the plane, then I think. Well, I turn that first one. He says, Indian people are different than Oriental people. There's a disconnect.